Krishna nama charitadi satapya vidya pito patapta rasanasya narochikano kintvadarad anudinam kalu saiva jushta svadvikramad bhavatitad garamolahantri. So yesterday we focused on this word, sita, the rock candy word that removes avidya, the, just as rock candy or sita or misri is the antidote for the liver disease that makes things taste bitter when they're actually sweet, but you continue to take the sweet and it cures the jaundice. The jaundice-like avidya of the living entity, when adarad, when it's, the name is carefully chanted, that's our emphasis this morning, carefully chanting adarad, you'll see this phrase several times this morning, then the avidya gradually becomes eliminated. When that avidya is removed, what's left? Knowledge of who Krishna really is. So, here's the translation. I'll read. The holy name, character, pastimes and activities of Krishna are all transcendentally sweet like sugar candy, although the tongue of one afflicted by the jaundice of avidya cannot taste anything sweet. It is wonderful that simply by adarad, carefully chanting these sweet names every day, a natural relish, that's this nama rasa, a natural relish awakens within his tongue, and his disease is gradually destroyed at the root. His disease is gradually destroyed at the root. That disease is avidya. And when bhakti awakens, avidya is dispersed or reduced and eliminated and knowledge awakens. Many of you know the very important verse from Canto 1. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Cha Yad Ahaitukam. So as knowledge awakens, ignorance is gone. Not just book learning, read lots, and then your knowledge is gone because, or your ignorance is gone because now you've got knowledge. It's not like that. It's bhakti awakens, and as bhakti awakens, then ignorance is gone and knowledge is restored because everything that we need to know is already within us. And it just becomes awakened. We hear and chant as a means of purification and awakening that which we've forgotten. But it's not information-centered, it's purification-centered. I'm going to spend a little bit of time now discussing or presenting Sachinandan Swami's theme, because he made his presentation in New Vrindavan last year during their Mother's Day festival. And after that Mother's Day festival, he published or sent out to all the attendees a little few messages that summarized everything that they covered in New Vrindavan during that japa retreat. So this is an image that comes from that PDF he sent out. And it's, you know, one of his disciples is a nice artist. So it's a depiction of that seagull flying over the waves of the ocean. We reminded ourselves, Ambudhi, Premambudhi, that the chanting of the holy name brings us to that stage of Anandam Budhi Vardhanam. So there's the waves of the ocean of Ananda, and in those waves, that's the Mahamantra again and again. That's a visual image of what he was teaching. And in his teaching, you'll see some elements of what we're doing also. There are five steps or stages. He's been at this for 20 years. He shared with me, he has been developing an institute in Germany with like 20 people helping him. I don't know what stage it's at. It's been a while since we discussed, but purposefully to take people that know nothing about nothing into the stage of understanding about bhakti through this institute. And so there's five parts of the institute. This, the first one is this yojana, or alignment. There we go. And second is sambandha, and his rendering of this in this PDF that he sent out is chanting with a sense of relationship, chanting with a, so that was from our discussion yesterday also, the name and the person are non-different, so it's a person. The name is a person. Nama Prabhu. So with the sense of relationship. And seva, this was one of the main themes, chanting in the mood of service. And vipralamba, now his words in this PDF was chanting in the right mood. Vipralamba means separation. So I'm trying to connect with you, but I'm feeling that connection is not sufficient. There's a weak connection, and I'm feeling separation from you. Wanting to connect with Krishna. In the beginning stage, it is wanting to go back to Godhead. But in the mature stage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, it's, kabhi habi bolo se din amar. It's wanting the mood of the six Goswamis. Hey Radhe, Braja Devi, Ke Chalalite. Where, oh Krishna, where are you now? So that's in mature elevated stage. For us, it's wanting to go back to Godhead. This question came up a while ago in my course of my travels, and Prabhupada answered the question. On the one hand, we, mama janmani janmani shre bhavatad bhakti rahai tuki twai, we should not want anything, just causeless devotional service. And then on the other hand, go back to Godhead. That's wanting something. But you know, if whatever you want to do, so how to reconcile those two instructions. Prabhupada's answer in a lecture was, in the beginning, it's good to want to go back to Godhead. It's artificial to say, oh, we're not there yet. It's nice. That's the mature stage. We're not there yet. It's good in the not yet mature stage to want to be with Krishna. Chanting in the right mood has different applications depending upon our stage of Krishna consciousness. Now, somebody who was viewing this evening class yesterday remotely just sent me a question. So I'm answering their question if they're listening now. Commonly, Prabhupada instructed over and over again, This Maha Mantra means, O energy of Krishna, Radharani, please engage me in Krishna's service. And that mood of service is awakened naturally and properly, mood of service through chanting. And then over there, there was the statement Prabhupada from a Bhagavad Gita lecture explaining the mantras, please accept me. And that's what the mantra, that's the mood of chanting the mantra. This is Vipralamba. Please accept me. That sounds like separation. Like, you know, I turned and walked. You didn't violate the relationship, I did. And not only once, you know, again and again and again and who knows how long. And now I realize that was a big mistake. And here I am, stuck. And the question specifically was, and in that position of stuck, I'm feeling I've got this need, that need, the other need. Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. So what about my needs? You know, please engage me in service. Please accept me. My thought is, in response specifically to that question, how do the two line up if you have so many needs? Well, just like a child, this is not the answer, but an answer. Just like a child doesn't need to say, you know, it's cold out, can you get me a jacket? They may say that, but mother and father are thinking, it's cold out, we better get a jacket. Or, you know, it's dinner time. Can I have some dinner? I'm hungry. You know, that's what moms and dads want to do. They want to take care of those needs. So it's an element of trust or faith that Krishna knows, and in our relationship with, we certainly can express to Krishna. Sarva kama. I'm struggling with such and such. And in my struggle with such and such, Krishna, please help me with the struggle with such and such. So that's a relationship with Krishna. That's just fine. But it's because Krishna is kind and Krishna has a big warehouse. He can take care of all of our needs. We don't really need to do that. So please establish me in my relationship with you. And then that's the entitlement to the fulfillment of our needs, just like a child reaching their arms to their mother or father. That's the please accept me mood. And mother and father, seeing that affection of their child, they don't need the prompt, but it just adds to the loving mood of the exchange between parent and child. And please engage me in your service. It's not so dissimilar. I'm speaking on this because somebody raised the question, how do these two connect? Please engage me in your service. Our life, it's not just for those who are elevated souls that don't have needs because they're so elevated, though even those that have needs. The real elevating principle is not approaching God and asking for things. If that is one's situation, fine. Tivrena bhakti yogena. When there's tivra bhakti, then one can go beyond that other, you know, the sense of, I need my needs to be fulfilled. Otherwise I can't really be comfortable in my relationship with Krishna or in my life because I have needs that must be fulfilled. Anyway, the operative principle is service. And in service, it's I want to restore my relationship of service with you. Please be kind upon me and accept me in your service. Okay, so the fifth is Sharanagati. These are the five elements that Satchinanda Swami has established, realized over 20-something years of just focusing and focusing and focusing on. I mean, the whole thing of having japa retreats goes way back without too many details. He and Bhurijan kind of conspired, or they enjoyed together doing, after Kartik is over and everyone's kind of got quiet in Vrindavan again, after Kartik is over, they started very quietly doing little japa retreats. And that went on for some number of years. And then they kind of let the cat out of the bag, and people started to hear, hey, he's got a japa retreat, so that people were questioning. And so now it's a very major event. They have a Govardhan retreat and a japa retreat. They're two separate things. And with two specific functions. But so now that from that japa retreat that they, from a seed they grew, now it's happening all over the place. So he is like a leader or an acharya in the realm of japa retreats. So these are very important. That's why I included the slide expressing them. And one of those elements are found here, and it's in your handout, the little set of papers you have on page number 8. It's, as you can see from page 8 and also from the screen here, we're going to focus on a little bit the message from Uddhava Gita. This is an image of Krishna speaking to Uddhava, because Uddhava intuitively knew Krishna is going to depart. So he approached Krishna and, as you see, fell at his feet and, how will I sustain my existence separate from you, because you're my everything? So Krishna pacified his heart through Uddhava Gita, and this verse and purport are from that section. So I'll read the verse and then a little bit. This is a morning. It's a japa retreat, but we're hearing the Swarup Shakti of Krishna in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Translation. One who has executed sacrificial performances and pious works for my satisfaction, and who thus worships me with fixed attention, obtains unflinching devotional service unto me. By the excellent quality of his service, such a worshiper obtains real knowledge of me. Very similar of one can understand who Krishna really is through the medium of service. So in the purport, long purport, not terribly long, but this sacrificial performances is explained on the strength of our acharyas. It's not mundane pious activities or mundane karmakanda rituals, or I should say mundane, materially purpose-driven karmakanda rituals. But it means the highest sacrifice is to chant the holy names of the Lord. And by taking shelter of the Lord's names, one will acquire unflinching devotion and realize knowledge of the absolute truth. A realized devotee is very attentive. Remember from yesterday, attentive as opposed to distracted. Very attentive in his devotional service, taking it as his life and soul, and so forth. So, this Adarad message, carefully chanting, that's from the Rupa Goswami's verse, has some elements, and one of those elements is he keeps himself fit for devotional service by constantly worshipping and glorifying the lotus feet of the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 1, begins with the presentation of Guru. Now, in that section, what Krishnadas Kaviraj is doing is he's revealing the Panchatattva and then elaborates in following chapters. But if you read carefully, or when you read carefully, you'll see that in addition to the Panchatattva, he adds number 6, and that's Guru. And the reason, Prabhupada explains, and because it's through Guru one can come to know anything about anything. It's this method of descending knowledge through disciplic succession that one can know anything about anything. Or without it, one can't know anything about anything. And one can't have proper knowledge. Because proper knowledge is not attained by the ascending, it's the descending method. And therefore, you know, Guru is folded into the Nityananda feature of the Panchatattva, but Krishnadas Kaviraj adds number 6 to the Panchatattva because that's a manifestation or representative of Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu who expands himself as Lord Nityananda, etc. And therefore, the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila Chapter 1 starts with Guru or Gurun, plural. And so that's in this commentary also. Worshipping he keeps himself fit. First, devotional service awakens from a very attentive chanting and service. He keeps himself fit for devotional service by constantly worshipping and glorifying the lotus feet of the spiritual master and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's what this image is meant to show. Through hearing of our founder Acharya and those who follow by repeating the words of the founder Acharya, the mood and the message of the disciplic succession, that's the key for coming to understand and keep oneself fit in devotional service. And the consequence of that is Krishna especially appreciating the mood of devotion to his representative, the spiritual master, he then picks up the devotee. And that brings one to this higher stage of devotion, ecstatic devotional service, the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu from sadhana bhakti, from the abha stage, moving towards the sadhana bhakti and the purifying stage. The progress is natural. So everything emphasis, here's that image again from yesterday. It's the hearing process. It starts with shravanam. And then from shravanam, then comes kirtanam. And by that shravanam kirtanam process, through disciplic succession, one becomes gradually qualified. And so when chanting through the connection with the spiritual master, in our case in ISKCON, the primary Shiksha Guru for all of us is our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, the connection with Krishna is directly experienced. Somebody asked yesterday, what's the experience like when you're really connected? Well, it's whatever Krishna wants. That's what the experience is. And so, kindly, Srila Prabhupada extended himself to unqualified people, having full faith in the holy name, and brought them to civilized condition, and granted them diksha. So, yesterday, we spent some time with attentiveness, and today is this carefully chanting, Adarad. Every day, carefully chanting. So, it's not every day we're carefully chanting. Some days we're better. Some days, you know, the hills and the valleys, the sine curve, sometimes and sometimes. But at least the clearing stage means we're trying. We may be more distracted because of something, and less distracted because Krishna is being kind upon us. But if we continue, then attentiveness is practically the same as this carefully chanting. And one mantra at a time. You all know that one. The close associate, Satchinandan Swami and Burijan Prabhu, they're the acharyas, the initializers of this japa retreat. And in Burijan's book called Japa, this is the emphasis, one mantra at a time. There's nine keys, but it's one mantra at a time and one mantra at a time and one mantra at a time. This is our transcendental mindfulness. Not the one, the mantras you didn't chant so well previously, or the good ones you're going to chant later, but it's the mantra that you're chanting at the moment, one mantra at a time. And when that connection of with the mantra is there, that the connection with Krishna is experienced, and it's whatever Krishna wants, that's what our experience is. Now, next message is a little different, but this is a message from Lord Macaulay. It's dated 1835. Lord Macaulay from the British Parliament was sent to India to check out ruling India as part of the British Commonwealth. So he toured and reported back. This is from the record of the British Parliament with the date. I have traveled across the length and breadth of India, and I have not seen one person who is a beggar. He should come again. We'll see some. Who is a thief? He should come again. There's thieves. Such wealth I have seen in this country. Such high moral values, people of such caliber, that I do not think we would ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is her spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient education system, her culture. For if the Indians think that all that is foreign in English is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them, a truly dominated nation. And so they did. So the culture, Prabhupada would sometimes speak of, establishing Krishna consciousness through culture, a cultural revolution. And by culture, he didn't just mean Bharatanatyam dancing or Karnataka dancing or, you know, singing a certain way. It's not what he meant. I mean, it doesn't exclude those things, but that's not the meaning. It's, you know, the spiritual culture. And spiritual culture starts with hearing in disciplic succession, because otherwise you're not going to get culture. It's very similar to Prabhupada's explanation of education. For children, is not so important as the academic part. It's important, but it's not so important. The importance is culture. And the same as he taught his students. It's not that he wanted us to learn Sanskrit necessarily, or something or something. He wanted character and culture. And culture starts with spiritual culture, because without spiritual culture, you can try to tweak behaviors, but if beneath the culture, the values and the deeply held convictions are out of alignment, if our values and deeply held convictions are out of alignment, then behavior modification isn't going to endure. That's not what he wanted to establish, an International Society for Behavior Modification Incorporated. That's not what he wanted. He wanted Krishna consciousness, and Krishna consciousness is the foundation of culture, so break the backbone. They did a good job. And restoring it is, you know, the task. And one of the great ways of restoring it is through the spiritual culture presented in his transcendental teachings and the chanting of the holy name. And these two, along with prasadam, of course, are very important elements of restoring spiritual culture. In this text that we read from 11th canto, chapter 11, text 47, keeping the lotus feet of the spiritual master and Krishna in one's heart is mentioned. And that's because as Krishna is luminous, where Krishna is in the heart, the spiritual master is at his feet. And so at the feet means in the mood of service. Yes? At the feet means in the mood of service. Therefore, obeisances. Namaha. Namaha, according to Padma Purana, means no false ego. So some people, this is a comment, some people come in to the temple and don't pay obeisances. Some people, you know, reach down towards the floor and touch their forehead, and that's, it's something, it's a gesture. But our training is, we, you know, full dandavats. That's what our training is. Unless you've got a bum knee like I have and you can't do a full, so it's pay obeisances. Namaha. Not just this, but namaha. This is also nice. It's respectful. That helps keep one healthy and strong in spiritual life. That's what the purport says. And so at the lotus feet of Krishna, and Krishna and his name are non-different, we're in this namaha position, or keeping the lotus feet of Krishna and the spiritual master in our heart. And by following that path, that's where we'll go. I find these images are helpful. Like, words are nice, and images are speak a thousand words. And there's our founder Acharya's lotus feet. We heard yesterday Rupa Goswami's definition of enthusiasm, endeavoring with intelligence. Remember that? From Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, utsahan. Real enthusiasm is endeavoring with intelligence. So where are we going to get intelligence from? Because we make lots of mistakes. We need intelligence in this descending fashion. And enthusiasm can manifest just in our eagerness to receive mercy. Prabhupada gives this example. Little Prabhupada story, the one on the right bottom specifically. Morning walk in New York. One morning we went to Battery Park. Sounds like a place where people get beat up or something, but Battery Park. Maybe get a charge. Battery Park. So, early morning, and we were walking along a walkway in the park, and over to the left there was a lake. Prabhupada looked up, saw the lake, walked over to the lake, and as we moved over to the lake, the ducks in the lake came over. And Prabhupada looked around and said, does anyone have any prasadam? And then someone had some prasadam, and he said, feed the ducks. And then they fed the ducks, and we were back on the path now, and Prabhupada stopped, put his cane into the pavement, and said, what lesson did we just learn? And everyone, he said, the duck that quacks the loudest gets the bread. So, Krishna's mercy is equally extended to everyone, just like the sun shines equally everywhere. Krishna's mercy is extended equally to everyone. But one who experiences the mercy is one who is eager for the mercy. It's not a small thing. No, Krishna will give us some bread anyways. He'll give us mercy anyways. But the lesson is that the duck that quacks the loudest gets the bread. Little birds, they're totally dependent, upper left. And they don't have feathers, so they can't go and forage and get their own. So they're dependent upon mama and papa bird, who take turns going and getting stuff. And then the birds crane their necks with their beaks open to get whatever's going to be dropped into their beaks and make a, a squeaking sound. It's a very high-pitched bird squeaking sound. They don't know how to make proper bird sounds yet. But that's the idea. The enthusiasm is essential in bhakti. Then we'll try to wind it up now. This is another very important verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2. It's in your handout sheet as well. But if you know from the Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2 is about the Lord of the Heart. Because at the end of Canto 1, the question by Maharaj Parikshit was, what should one do at the time of death? And what is that subject matter that one should hear, chant, and always remember? So in the first three chapters of Canto 2 is Shukadev Goswami first starts to speak. And the first is the universal form. Form a personal conception of God. And then the personal conception of God manifest by the universal form. It transitions to the process of meditation upon Supersoul. So Chapter 2 is about Paramatma realization. But Prabhupada very expertly moves it from Paramatma realization to Bhagavan realization, even at Chapter 2. So I'm going to read just some little sections from the purport. If you're interested, you can follow along. Starting on page 10. at the starting at the top. We may also remember in this connection that the process of gradual emancipation, liberation, moksha, attaining our spiritual form and acting in our spiritual form, that's the Bhagavatam's message, by the devotees in the manner mentioned above, although authoritative, is not viable in the present age because of people's being primarily unaware of the yoga practice. Or if they do the yoga practice, they think it's go to yoga class and wear loose clothing and do asanas and pranayama, and that's the yoga practice. Next paragraph. Lord Chaitanya, therefore, made it easier for the prospective devotee of the present age in the following specific manner. Ultimately, there's no difference in the result. The first and foremost point is that one must understand the prime importance of bhakti yoga. This message is in Canto 3, Chapter 12, when Brahma is manifesting the sub-creation and many things are coming from him. And Prabhupada explains, it's in the purport, but it's in the verse, but he explains that the primary function of education of parents to children is the same message, understanding the primary importance of bhakti yoga, the primary value of the human life. Children's education means understanding the importance of this human form of life. And that, what's that important? What's the capacity to know who we are and to know who is Krishna? Through the medium of devotional service, we can know who is Krishna and not otherwise. But we need the spiritual conception of self before we can have the proper understanding of the bhakti process. Otherwise we'll have a misunderstanding of Krishna and the goal of devotional service, etc. So the primary importance of bhakti yoga. Down a little bit. One who secures some resources in bhakti yoga can understand the importance of service to the Lord through the causeless mercy of the Lord as well as that of the spiritual master. Same message as we heard. A sincere soul is helped by the Lord through meeting a bona fide spiritual master, the representative of the Lord. Same as this beginning part of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that a devotee sow the seed of bhakti yoga in his heart and nurture it by the watering of hearing and chanting of the holy name, fame, etc. of the Lord, the simple process of offenselessly chanting and hearing the holy name. This is the carefully chanting message from Nectar of Instruction. The simple process of offenselessly chanting and hearing the holy name of the Lord will gradually promote one very soon to the stage of emancipation. Like freeing a slave. That's the modern use of this emancipation of slavery. Final paragraph at the bottom. When we speak of hearing and chanting, it means that not only should one chant and hear of the holy name of the Lord as Rama, Krishna, etc., but one should also read and hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of devotees. The primary practice of bhakti yoga will cause the seed already sowed in the heart to sprout, and by regular watering process, as mentioned above, the bhakti yoga creeper will begin to grow by systematic nurturing. I'm going to make emphasis on this systematic nurturing, not just a behavior, but it's a consciousness of nurturing bhakti through the hearing and chanting process. Not the behavior, it's the awakening, nurturing of the bhakti principle when we're working in the office or we're going to school or we're cooking in the kitchen or walking from point A to point B or we're living our life. The bhakti principle is to be nurtured, systematic nurturing. The kripa will grow to such an extent that it will penetrate the coverings of the universe, reach the effulgent sky, the Brahmajyoti, and go farther and farther and reach the spiritual sky where there are innumerable spiritual planets, etc. So this metaphor, the gardening metaphor, is found in several places. Of course, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu uses that same metaphor in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But this systematic nurturing, the seed by the mercy of Guru and Krishna comes and is to be systematically nurtured. That's what we're doing, or attempting to do at least, through this japa retreat. And then take those same messages as an ongoing systematic nurturing method. In the Harinam Chintamani text, same discussion. Haridas is speaking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is a book authored by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And similar to this message of a child calling for mother or feeling oneself dependent rather than independent, then in that dependence that's please accept me mood, then the connection with Krishna naturally is restored. Krishna is more than willing. We're not as willing as Krishna is willing, and he doesn't interfere. But when we're willing, Krishna extends his hand, his help, and the natural relationship feelings become awakened. In connection with the Gundicha Marjana pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita, long purport by Bhaktisiddhanta, quoted by Prabhupada there, that this gardening metaphor is expanded. The seed is given, and the watering process of chanting and worshipping the deity form, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that's our bhakti process. Now, what about obstacles? Sometimes we find some obstacles. And the obstacle really is something inside, not something really outside. Nothing can stop bhakti. But the bhakti, because bhakti is pure. So in Canto 3, Chapter 29 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Devahuti asks Kapila Dev a very important question. I got it. Bhakti is pure. But what happens if our consciousness is not pure? Then what? Can bhakti be mixed? And he says, bhakti is pure, but consciousness can be mixed according to the modes of nature. And then he uses these terms, mode of ignorance. One in the mode of ignorance serves this way, one in the mode of passion serves that way. And Prabhupada's translation of the Sanskrit terms, he calls it the separatist mentality. Separatist mentality is that my interest is something other than Krishna's interest. Not having full faith in the holy name. So here are the Sanskrit terms that he uses. Bina drik. The word drik has to do with seeing. And bina is separate, seeing things separate from Krishna. And pratak bhava. Again, separatist. This is how Prabhupada doesn't translate them differently. One who sees his interest is separate from that of the Supreme Lord. That's the obstacle. And the resolution of the obstacle is the awakening of devotion places our interest as Krishna's interest. You know, in the mature stage, that's prema. In the practicing stages, I forgo the short-term I want thing as much as is realistic for me to do so. And that's an important qualifier. As much as is realistic, according to suitability, in Rupa Goswami's terms. And make this our goal. Krishna's pleasure is everything. That's a goal. And it's a goal worthy of us to strive for. So even when there's needs, it's to try to see those needs in relation to Krishna's pleasure. Rather than listing some of our human needs, body, mind, relation, finance, career, you know, stuff. Somebody I know, they were returning from a temple, and on the way back home, they got in a car accident, and the car was totaled. There was a need. You know, nobody was hurt in the car, fortunately, but the car was totaled, so they got another car. So that's a need, get another car or something. You have some medical, you go to a doctor. Go to the doctor or do your exercise or whatever, eat a proper diet that you know is proper for your constitution, etc. Why do we do those things? Not just, I want good health, right? You know, I want to get from point A to point B so I get another car. It's service to Krishna mood. We strive to do that, and the awakening of that is through the chanting of the holy name and hearing from scripture. Now, mentioned in the text is also this worship of Tulsi, because we know from Haridas Thakur and our scriptures as well. We sing every morning. Those who are seeking this Nama Rasa or Nama Prabhu's mercy, Tulsi's ready. She wants to give. And so when we have our 64 round day, we'll make an effort to have Tulsi in the temple room so we can take shelter of Tulsi and pray to Tulsi for bhakti. We're almost done here. Time has already passed. Systematic nurturing. That phrase that's in the purport of the Bhagavatam verse. Systematic nurturing and carefully chanting this Adarad message. They're very close. And if we apply them, they're nice messages, and what's important with nice messages is to let it go inside and then cultivate. And when we cultivate, then the practical application feature takes us to Krishna. And next to the last slide is this one, little story. I heard this one from Sachinandan Swami. We know from Bhagavad Gita that we distribute on the back covers Emerson and Thoreau. And they liked reading Bhagavad Gita. And I mentioned this once at a college. They said, oh, I really like transcendental poetry. I said, I didn't know any American youth is interested in transcendental poetry anymore. It's like IT because I can get a good job and get some money. Om Jai Jagadisha Hare. So she somehow knew. So here's a little Ralph Waldo Emerson story. When he was elder, he lived on a farm, and one evening when they were trying to get the cows back in the barn, one young cow or bull refused to go into the barn. They got, you know, from the pasture, but to the edge of the barn, wouldn't go in the barn. So they tried pushing this young heifer into the barn, not going into the barn. So both of them got on the backside and started pushing, and that wouldn't go. And then they got a rope, put it around heifer's neck, and pushed and pulled and wouldn't go. And then there's a lady, a worker lady, came by, saw what they were doing, smiled, caught their eye, held up her finger, made sure they were watching. She went over to a bowl that had salt. She put her finger in the bowl and showed it to the heifer and put the finger in front of the mouth of the heifer. And she just moved her finger and into the barn he went, or she. And she smiled. So the short story is, better to attract the mind to go to Krishna than just pushing. You'll find better results. So Krishna is all attractive and we're distracted. So pray to Krishna. Oh, all attractive. Hare Krishna. Please attract me because I'm distracted. I'm depending upon your all attractiveness and your mercy. And you reach out like that, and he's more than ready. That will help you, practically speaking, will help you in the go from distracted to focused chanting by this ending mercy, not just by forcing the mind. We've all experienced the forcing the mind program. It doesn't have a really fantastic result. So alignment, the first of those five processes that Satchidananda Swami spoke of. This is our last slide and we're done. Align the heart and the mind. So we've been hearing some messages that are to help guide the mind. Now, the intelligence is needed to guide the mind, otherwise the mind is fickle. But to keep the intelligence moving in the right direction, thus the mind moving in the right direction, and the ear moving in the right direction, there has to be this alignment of the heart. It's back to yesterday, the why. Why is it important to us anyway? And the clearer the why is, then the feeling behind the whole alignment process that carry us closer to Krishna, the attentiveness in our chanting of the holy name. And then it'll help us awaken Namarasa. There's a conclusion of our morning discussion. Now, there was really lively questions answers yesterday. Let's see what happens this morning. Any comments or questions?
Guru Maharaj, you mentioned that it's important that one worships the lotus feet of Guru and Krishna. Can you expand on the meaning of worship the lotus feet of Guru and
Yeah, very simple. Very simple.
Someone said also it means following the instructions.
Yeah, that's the main thing. It's not just your behavior. It's a mood. And the mood is submission, tadvidhi pranipat, that's the mood of submission, and then taking the instructions to heart. That's the seva. That's the following of the instructions. But it's the mood, and it's connecting with the instructions within one's heart. Because if it's not, the instruction is not within the heart, then, you know, sometimes not. We'll be unsteady. But if it goes into the heart in that mood of submission, it'll stay in the heart. To expand on that, just a small appreciation of the Srimad Bhagavatam being compared to the literary form of Krishna. Krishna departed and Krishna appeared as Srimad Bhagavatam. According to Padma Purana, the first two cantos are his two lotus feet. So in those who have taken Bhakti Bhai Bhav seminar in Vrindavan and Mayapur, they really get into it. Of the first two cantos are meditation upon the lotus, are the lotus feet, and meditate upon in hearing in that mood. This is the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And to be at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, it's the mood of service. When you're at someone's feet, it's the humility. False ego is namaha, it's gone. And without false ego, I'm at the feet of the Srimad Bhagavatam, receiving the instructions, I'm ready to serve. And even if we have an inquisitive spirit, we may not have been able to articulate a particular question so well. This was my appreciation just reading Bhagavad Gita first time through as a college kid. So many questions that I had, I never knew how to phrase them properly, and they're phrased and then they're answered. But the prashna, the inquisitive mood, or jigyasu, the inquisitive mood, is preceded by pranipat. So that's that 434 verses, what it means. That's my response to your question. Not just following instructions. That can be mechanical. Yes.
Maharaj, this is related to your answer for surrender versus our needs. So in real scenario, Maharaj, how we will know whether somebody is really surrendered or, you know, he is having an attitude of carelessness or dutyless?
Time. Unless you're a pure devotee, then you can know right away. But if those of us that aren't pure devotees, over time, the consistency and mood as well of service.
But when we are, maybe if you allow to ask one more question.
Yeah, sure.
So when we have to take a decision, that time how would we know that?
You do your best. You're speaking now about yourself, or you're speaking a decision about your own behavior, your own free will choices of go left or right? Or are you speaking something else?
Going left or right, like how I would know whether, you know, I'm running away from my duties or I'm really surrendering to Krishna.
Oh, that's a very specific question.
Yes.
How will I know if I'm going away from my duties or if the purpose in doing what I'm doing is surrender to Krishna? It may be a specific application you're thinking about, which I don't know and I don't need to know. But it's a really good question. Therefore, I'm pausing a bunch because in the moment, we need to make a decision, and it's also in the moment we need to be introspective. And if you're striving to, if you're asking yourself that question, you're more likely to get the answer than if you don't ask the question. So it's a good question. And therefore, there always need, the ongoing cultivation of bhakti requires that question. And realigning, this is a phrase that one devotee I know uses a lot. Realigning again and again and again and again and again through the process of introspection. Here's the goal. And it's of the two, it's the first, the second one. But if we ask the question, then we'll detect where there's hesitation due to some other reason, like, you know, self-interest, and that's, I'm feeling something. If I'm introspective, I'm feeling something. And if we're not honest, according to Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha, it's the first sign of offense is dishonesty in the world and with oneself both. So the bhakti principle is we have to be honest. Satyam. Now that's para satyam is not just, you know, mode of goodness honest, but, you know, honest before Krishna. So that's a right question. It's a fantastic question to ask. And we may not get it right in the moment, but if we're continuing over time to ask the question, Krishna will help us. He, either from within our heart or somebody next to us, will tap us on the shoulder and say, Prabhu, you're headed for the ditch. But realigning again and again and again, through the introspection process. So that's the jigyasu or prashna. It's a fantastic question. Thank you. Sanjaya, here comes the microphone.
Oh, thank you. I have a similar question.
Similar question.
Yeah, but a little bit in different context. So, if I have a desire to do something and I'm not sure if this will please Lord Krishna, should I focus on giving up the desire, or should I focus on trying to make adjustment so that desire that I have somehow will please Lord Krishna?
Well, there's a third option. No. You pause. You don't act on it. Not like you trash it or you tweak it. Just pause and do this realignment. You look inside. Because if there's some hesitation, it may be because there's something that we know intuitively or super soul is telling us, hey, it's going to take you away from Krishna to some degree. So now, So you pause. You go, that's mode of goodness. You go into this reflective space and you turn, you dial into the Krishna channel. Am I doing this for you? I mean, there may be some need. Let's say music. You like music. So, am I doing this because I like music, or am I doing it because it gratifies a need? I mean, that's not probably your example, but so it's a mix. But, you know, I'm being honest with myself. There's this liking, music liking. So let me take this and as much as I can, make it an offering for the pleasure of Krishna. And I believe that's what you do. I mean, there's a mix. I also believe there's a mix, but that's okay. The offering to Krishna part and try to amplify that. Now, if there's something else that you're not sure if it's going to be pleasing to Krishna or not, pause. Check in with Krishna. And, you know, be honest with yourself. What is this other thing that's going on? And what's the best way to manage that? Overcome that, if I can. Go beyond it. Those who are serious about cultivating bhakti, they do that regularly. Those that are not serious, it's just, they get bounced around by circumstance and, you know, guna and karma. The waves toss them around in another way. So it's a good, same introspection question. It's almost 9:30. One final question, if there is. Up front here.
So I'm just trying to understand what the alignment of the mind and heart means. In like normal mindfulness, they say you don't force the mind to do something. Instead, you have a center point. Let the mind wander away, and then it comes back. And then, so. At least that's what I understood of mindfulness, what they say in the...
Okay. Yeah. I'm prepared for your answer, your question. Here we go. There's the conventional sense of what it means, and here's the Satchinandan Swami sense of what it means. You gave the conventional one. Here's what he puts in his PDF. You ready? Not like this is the answer and that the other one's wrong or something. To align the mind means to relinquish thoughts of the past and future. This is mindfulness, be in the moment, and focus on being utterly present. That's to align the mind. Two, keep bringing your attention back to hearing the holy names. Don't despair if the mind still wanders. Just learn to catch it and bring it back. It is something one needs to practice relentlessly. And then another point. This is from his PDF. It's Prabhupada's quote speaking in Hawaii. What is controlling the mind? This is alignment of the mind. You have to chant and hear, that's all. You have to chant with your tongue and hear the sound, that's all. What's the question of the mind? Now we'll hear tomorrow morning something where Bhaktisiddhanta says nearly the same thing. Not identical. Then this is from Satchinandan Swami's PDF. To align the heart means to think about the Lord whose name you chant. Oh, the person. Chant with devotional feelings. Well, I don't have devotional feelings. Well, that's a feeling. heart-aligned or attentive chanting really means chanting with attachment for the owner of the name, Nama and Nami. So that's alignment of the heart. And there's, read carefully Prabhupada's writings and hear his lectures, and many cases that the two are used interchangeably, the heart and the mind, just like Chaita Darpana Marjanam, cleansing the mirror of the mind, cleansing the heart. They're used interchangeably. So the distinction may be a little blurry. And that's okay. But because it's his alignment of body, mind, and heart, that's what he means. I'm going to end. It's 9:30. Time for breakfast.